Warning. The following broadcast you're about to listen to is filled to the brim with explicit adult language and content. Don't like it? Don't listen to it. Don't complain about it. Just ignore it. If you like it or don't mind it, then listen up and enjoy the show. Welcome to the Regimental Vox, a podcast dedicated to all things Warhammer and wargaming in general. I am your host and Vox operator for the evening, Caleb Meyer. It is Monday, May 17th, 2021. This is episode 89. And yes, I am finally recording again on a Monday. Holy shit. No scheduling conflicts. What? Oh my god, how weird is that shit? So, yeah, I actually, oddly enough, today work was quite the opposite of what has happened in more recent times, as opposed to being more of an interruption. I had to work stupidly extra early, do some behind-the-scenes shit at work, and so, yeah, I ended up getting out of work a lot earlier. It's exhausted, but, you know, it is what it is. It's allowed me to be able to rant and rave and yell into a microphone for the day, so let's get up on it. So, what's going on in my neck of the woods? Well, actually, I just finished my first, new commission in quite some time, which was nice. It looks like it'll lead to, more work in the near future. So, I do actually have some pieces that I need to get in contact with the person who something I started working on well before all this pandemic shit, actually. But because of the pandemic starting and whatnot, it just kind of got put on hold altogether. He didn't need them. It wasn't a big rush, so at some point I gotta figure that shit out. But but I did finish my, you know, first newer commission in quite some time. And that was nice. So I ended up spending all the same money that I'd just gotten on more paints and shit. So, you know, it is what it is. This is the hobby, right? It's all about profit. Not in the slightest. So, but yeah. Beyond that, we've not been able to game as much lately. Just work, kids, life, etc. Although we are planning to play some more Cursed City, hopefully tonight, actually. We did pick up some gaming aids on Etsy, actually, from a seller, Schooner Labs. I highly recommend you check them out. This is not sponsored in any way, shape, fashion, or capacity, so this is just my personal opinions and feelings on this matter. But Schooner Labs, they put out some pretty high quality stuff. Krista got me a gift a while back and stuff that's like a victory point counter and stuff for that's all Magikin themed. But we just picked up from this guy, we have, it's like basically like that replaces the combat track and the quest tracker and a bunch of other shit, so that you can have things far more organized on your table as opposed to having shit just splayed out everywhere. You can kind of just, you know, keep it more contained. It keeps the cards and stuff upright and whatnot, so they're, you know, very visible. And you can actually see all of your stuff without it taking up as much fucking real estate on your table. If there's anything to complain about with the game, and when I say complain, I mean that it's the only thing I could really bitch about, and it's my own fault for not having a big enough table. It's that it takes up a lot of fucking table space between the board itself and your character cards and the combat track and the quest tracker and fucking data cards for the enemies, and like we use a dice tray and so it takes up a lot of fucking space, so having a means of organizing it is great. So, but beyond that, that's about all we got going on in our neck of the woods. So let's go ahead and get into some newsy bits here. We, well, there's actually a lot of preview stuff that they've been announcing and whatnot, but I don't really want to cover a whole lot of the preview things because they're things that are coming out here very soon. So hopefully we could just talk about them directly from the source instead. There were some major leaks on the Soulblight Gravelords book this past week. I've looked at a decent portion of them. A brutal seeming army, very much so. If you're a big fan of just tar pitting the shit out of your opponent and then just kind of wrecking ball through them with you know, characters and shit and monsters, definitely an army to check out in those regards. I'm not gonna go over all the preview stuff, but they have started pre-orders for them. There will be Soulblight Gravelord stuff coming out this coming weekend to start. We'll have the Battle Tome available. The Laukavai. I think it's Laukavai. Mother of Nightmares. Yeah, it's Laura, but with a K in it. So Laka? Laka would make sense. Let's go with that. Laukavai. Mother of Nightmares. One of my personal favorite models coming out for the Soulblight Gravelords, but some people we've discussed before with the whole Bat-Tar thing are not too thrilled about it, but it's badass looking. The Vampire Lord, the model that we saw forever ago that got leaked, the one with the long red hair and the bats coming off of her hair and shit, that one will be coming out. The new Blood Knights kit. Death Rattle Skeletons, Dead Walker Zombies, Fell Bats, War Scroll Cards, and Dice Set all coming out this coming weekend. As well as some merch if you want some poor looking shit. I'm sorry. A lot of GW's merch, much of a big fan of GW, a lot of it looks really trash. It just looks like something that someone who's been dabbling around in Photoshop hopped onto Redbubble and wanted to make a buck or two. It just doesn't look very good. But generally speaking, very corny shit. That being said, it's not that all of it's bad. I definitely don't want to say never check out their merch. But yeah, a lot of it's pretty hokey. They are also releasing a new brush range. 100% synthetic brush range. So, it'll be interesting. I'm hoping at some point to maybe check these out myself. But for right now, not necessarily a big rush to go buying new Well, actually, I do want new brushes. I always want new brushes. Yeah, so they got this new line of brushes coming out. If I do get my hands on them, I will do a little review on them and let you know. But otherwise, it's going to be a bit before that happens. So, so that's the wave one of the Gravelord stuff. Their wave two has already been announced as well. That'll be the pre-orders that start this coming weekend and then being released the following. I won't go over all the specific details, right now, but, I will say that they are releasing the, Cursed City models separately. Those will be available to start pre-ordering this, Saturday. So, it's actually kind of funny, the way it's worded on the website. They still do not bother mentioning anything about the words Cursed City. They don't say, hey, we're releasing these models separately now from the Cursed City box set. It's just like, yeah, here's a guy and his duders. Don't know where they came from, but you want them. Got it, guys. Also, too, the AdMech Codex that was delayed will finally be being released, which pisses me off to no end. And one would say, but wait, you love AdMech. You should be excited. I am. I am very excited. Extremely, extremely excited for this codex. But why at the same fucking time as the Gravelords launch? Like, come on, guys. You know, fuck me, right? And all for wanting to not spend all of my money in one go. But for fuck's sake, you know, goddamn. There's a whole, whole, whole bunch of other shit coming out at the same time, too. We're not going to go over all of it, though, right now, because that's pre-orders that are coming up. They haven't even started pre-ordering them yet, so we're not going to worry about it right this second. And I'm waving my hand around like anybody can see it, but they can't. So, all right, moving on. This coming Saturday is also going to be the next Warhammer preview. It looks like it's just going to be focused on the animations, the Warhammer animation stuff that they've been teasing for God fucking knows how long at this point. I don't even remember when they started showing off some of this stuff. But they've done these little teeny tiny, you know, bullshit teases for what feels like decades now, and never really showing anything of real substance. So hopefully this means that we'll be seeing something, you know, greater, bigger, and actually getting an idea of maybe when we'll be able to see some final products and stuff too. And I'm definitely not knocking the animation thing. Actually, I'm really excited for it and whatnot. I'm just, it's kind of just frustrating to some degree for them to really talk it up in every single fucking preview that they put out, but never give any more information than what we already know. Or if they do, it's like super, 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 super teeny tiny little bits. Yeah, it'll be nice to actually maybe get some, you know, bigger idea of what we're looking at with, these animations coming up. So, but yeah, so that starts this Saturday. If you live in my neck of the woods, on the, east coast of the United States, well, technically I live in the Midwest, but I'm part of the Eastern time zone. So, but yeah, it will be starting at 1 p.m. on Saturday the 22nd. So, yeah. So, definitely check it out if you want to check it out. So, all right. Let's move on. Let's see here. There's not much else we're going to cover before we get into the main meat and potatoes here. But they did, for those of you of the video game inclined variety, they did show off, the first, like, gameplay trailer for Total War Warhammer 3, and, I think this was on the 13th, yeah, this past Thursday, I'm pretty certain, is when this was showed off, yeah, so they show, you know, some new cinematic trailers, as well as, some actual gameplay footage shown off. I don't know. I didn't even necessarily watch the full gameplay reveal from start to finish, because I was rather bored watching the video personally. I'm really excited for Total War Warhammer 3. I really am. I've been waiting a long time and stuff to get my hands on this game. You know, a lot of people have been waiting for it. But yeah, the gameplay they decided to show off honestly just wasn't of real interest to me. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. It just was not. They showed off this new survival battle mode, and it's basically like a weird tower defense type of dealio where you're just going to survive against waves of enemies by doing little builds and stuff like that in the middle of the field to funnel enemies or damage them or whatever else. And I mean, yeah, I think that might have a place in the game and stuff, don't get me wrong. Maybe it'll be more fun to play it in person, but watching the video is just honestly not that exciting. It just didn't give me enough. I don't know how to word it exactly right off the top of my head. It just felt like it lacked zazz. Okay, it lacks zazz. Yeah, that being said, I'm really excited. You know, Kislev and Cathay will both be featured in the game, which are two factions that have never before been available. Like even in the tabletop, so that's pretty cool. Definitely opens up possibilities with the old world being released and stuff that we might see these actual actually on the tabletop itself eventually. But yeah, overall, you know, what little I've seen of the armies and stuff like that that they've shown off, it just for some reason comes across as rather cheesy to me. Too much cheese even. But once again, I could be being super picky and I might not be necessarily seeing, you know, the best of what they have to offer. One thing that I will say that did confuse me in some of the stuff that I'd read is probably just the way it was worded. But the way that this one article, I don't remember where I read it, but it was talking about how with them adding on the Chaos Demons and Kislev and Cathay, that it would be wrapping up, and now that the game would have all of the factions from the original game and then some. And it was, you know, as in Kislev and Cathay being the and then some. But that's not all of the factions. Ogre Kingdoms is still distinctly missing. Now, once you have both Chaos Demons and Ogre Kingdoms, I do believe that is all of your factions all present finally. But otherwise, yeah, no, it's distinctly missing Ogre Kingdoms. So I do hoping that what they meant to say was that, you know, they'll be finally adding in the last of the missing factions with this, and you know, basically, i.e., Ogre Kingdoms will be included. They just don't explicitly state that. But I could just be doing wishful thinking. Admittedly, I do think it would be a little frustrating and silly, that after all of this stuff that they put out for this franchise, that they end up, you know, creating whole new factions, Kislev, Cathay, the vampire fucking Pirate Coast guys. I don't even fucking remember, you know, the actual faction name, but yeah, the one with the pirate vampires and shit. You know, they add in all this, you know, factions that aren't actually in the tabletop but are in the lore, and you know, they bring back armies that didn't even carry over in any capacity to Age of Sigmar, you know, Bretonnia and Tomb Kings and shit like that. Which, I mean, it makes sense, because this isn't about Age of Sigmar. But my point is that, you know, we bring back dead factions, we create brand new factions, and we hit every single mainline tabletop faction but Ogre Kingdoms would be kind of fucking weird. But, you know, time will tell, we'll see. But yeah, so beyond that, I'm not going to get into all of the details right now. They put out a little preview today for the AdMech Codex. Some of you who follow the Warhammer community site might recall that they were putting out preview stuff for the AdMech Codex, and then it suddenly stopped putting out preview stuff, and I was like, huh, that seems kind of weird. And then a couple weeks later, they were like, oh, by the way, we're not doing pre-orders for a while on anything. So now that the AdMech Codex is actually coming out, they're putting out more articles previewing some stuff from it. So they today showed off the Forge Worlds, the pre-built ones that you can work with, as well as the some little previews of building your own custom Forge World. After looking this over, it does look like, in my brain and memory might be wrong here, admittedly, but it does seem like there have been some downgrades even in some of these factions here and stuff, and some getting upgraded, you know, in these Forge World options and stuff. But I will reserve judgment, as well as, you know, everything outside of the fact that I reserve judgment until I actually see the final product itself. There's also context that's super important that you only get from the final product, in that, you know, something that might not seem all that great, like, oh, well, what value does this do? Oh, well, it turns out that they've added this whole other feature to this faction that makes this super viable. Okay, cool. You know, or sometimes the reverse. Something sounds really good on paper until you see the context of, in the wider context of the faction and codex as a whole, and go, oh, this is actually rather useless. So, but yeah, when I perused this article earlier, I was just, I was a little dismayed, I guess. Man, that sounds super dismissive. I don't know, I was a little dismayed, I guess. Ooh. But, you know, I think this is a natural, not saying it's necessarily a healthy thing, but a natural thing when you have, like, a favorite faction, when it doesn't get toys that let you just literally, you know, decimate and absolutely easy button auto win the game, that you're like, oh, well, that doesn't make sense because my faction is the bestest and therefore I should automatically win all the time. I know nobody actually, well, I was going to say nobody actually wants to win all the time, but, well, with the amount of cheaters we have in the good old game of Warhammer, it's safe to say that a lot of people do want to win no matter what happens. So, yeah, they don't really care how they get there, just that they get there. But, yeah, overall, generally speaking, most of us do actually want an actual game, want some semblance of a challenge and something that makes us actually think when we're playing it and not just automatically win, but, you know, to each their own. So, but yeah, once again, we're not going to go over details on that shit because we're going to be seeing the codex here dropping very soon. We'll go over it then. So, let's go ahead, take a break. When we come back, going to start picking back up on that Drukhari Codex review, so stay tuned. Welcome back to the Regimental Vox. I was actually just listening back to the first portion of today's episode and realizing that I sound nasally as hell, so I apologize if that continues to be a thing. I admit, I am feeling a bit stuffy for the first time in quite some time. I don't think I have a cold or anything like that. I highly, highly suspect that since the weather's finally deciding to turn to something resembling spring, early summer, it's just that the changeovers got me a little fucked up at the moment. So, but let's get up on it here. Let's get back into this coverage of the Drukhari Codex. I know last time we went over, like, the Lords of Camara. I think we covered a little bit of the favored retinues and how those tie in with the Lords of Camara, the upgrade factors and stuff. Today, we are going to quickly kind of peruse through. And by quickly, I mean it's still going to take a decent length of time because, once again, there's a lot of shit in this book. We're going to look at, comparison order and all that good jazzaroo, the different cabals and covens and all that other shit that you can build your faction around. Now, as mentioned before, the way this book works, as opposed to having very distinct, full sub-factions, there's so many sub-factions, because you have the sub-factions of the Cabals, the Covens, and the Witch Cults, there's just so many of them. They're a little bit lighter, overall, compared to, like what we usually see when you think of like a full-on faction, or full-on sub-faction, excuse me. But that's just because there's so many of them. So it kind of makes sense. But anyway, my point is that I'm not really going to compare cabals against cults against covens. Rather, we'll be comparing cabals to each other, covens to each other, so on and so forth. But keep in mind, too, the way that it works as well is that in order to stay battle-forged and everything else, you will need to keep Cabal units in Cabal detachments. You will need to keep your witch cults in witch cult detachments, so on and so forth. Unless you're building a real space raid detachment, those do let you do some other shit. So, all right. So, kicking it off here, Cabal the Black Heart. We'll be starting with the Cabals, by the way. Cabal the Black Heart. Each of these has an obsession. I should go over this quick, sorry. Each of these has an obsession, a warlord trait, a relic, and a faction-specific stratagem that will be available to them. So, I did forget to mention, too, they'll all also have your own, you know, your Build-A-Bear Drukhari faction shit available, too. So, all right, so anyway, moving back on to this. Obsession for Cabal the Blackheart is Thirst for Power. Units with this obsession have the Power from Pain ability. They treat that as the current battle round as being one higher than it actually is when determining what effects they gain. I don't remember if we went over the Power from Pain factor before. But basically, a Power from Pain, just in case we didn't, we'll just quickly crash course through it. It is a system of cumulative effects that, based on where you are in the game, you know, adds new features to your units. Quick run through battle round one and up in your Deciphering. Everybody's got a 6 up invuln save. Round two, eager to flay, eligible to declare a charge in a turn in which you advanced. 3, flensing fury. Each time a model on this unit makes a melee attack, add 1 to that attack's hit roll. If this unit has the vehicle or monster keyword, it does not suffer the penalties incurred to its hit rolls for firing heavy weapons at enemy units that are within engagement range of it. 4, mantle of agony. Models in this unit have a 5+ invulnerable save. And then lastly, 5 and up, emboldened by bloodshed. Each time a morale test is taken for this unit, it's automatically passed. If this unit's characteristics can change as it suffers damage, this unit is considered to have double the number of wounds remaining for the purposes of determining what those characteristics are. Determining. Man, having trouble with my words. My tongue is 40 times too big. So the point being is that, you know, if they have this Power from Pain ability with Cabal the Black Heart, you could basically start the game in round two. So you're already able to do the whole declare a charge and have the 6 up invuln save. Once again, only applying to models that have this particular obsession. So if you have a Cabal the Black Heart, but you've also got some witch cult and some homunculus coven, they don't all get to have that ability. It's only units that it actually applies to that are in that detachment. Even in the case, I think even in the case of the Real Space Raid, you don't get to just share all this shit around. So, and then if a Real Space Raid detachment includes a Cabal of the Black Heart Archon, then until the end of the battle, all blades for higher units in that detachment that have the Power from Pain ability also treat the current battle round as being one higher than it actually is when determining what effects they gain. So that is one that does spread beyond the units that are part of the, that actually have the Cabal keyword itself. Add 1 to the leadership characteristic of models with this obsession. Each time a unit with this obsession is selected to shoot or fight, you can reroll 1 hit roll when resolving that unit's attacks. You see a lot more of these reroll one thing, in a lot of these armies now. And definitely not saying it's a bad thing by any stretch, far from it. But I do find it kind of interesting because, yes, it does allow you to reroll that critical roll, but it does, you know, make it also, too, where you're not getting as much out of it, out of the reroll and stuff. You know, when you have a reroll everything, that's far more powerful. But I do feel like that's a good thing because I feel like, especially in 8th edition, there was too many reroll everythings. You know, be it an aura ability and a unit ability, so on and so forth. There are still some, you know, reroll all failed rolls for this particular type and stuff like that. But There's definitely more of these controlled reroll one of your choice dealios. So, Warlord trait, Labyrinthine Cunning. While this Warlord is on the battlefield, each time you or your opponent spends any command points, use a stratagem. You can roll 1d6 for each command point spent. On a 6, you gain 1 command point. Outside of the fact that this gives you the obvious advantage of, hey, I could do command points, and have a possibility of refunding back what I spent, which is great. This also provides your opponent a disincentive to using their own stratagems, because every time they use a stratagem, they increase the likelihood and odds that you're going to get command points. So they kind of want to weigh their options before they just blow their command points willy-nilly. They want to make sure whatever they're going to do is going to be effective and get done the job. And that it'll be worthwhile, basically, that even if you do end up getting command points out of them spending their command points on their stratagem, they're still going to pay off better. So an interesting kind of mindfuckery sort of thing there. Which I guess Labyrinthine Cunning would be a good name for that. Then Relic, we have Writ of the Living Muse, Cabal the Blackheart, Archon model only. The bear has the following ability, Writ of the Living Muse. Ooh, interesting that they, what an original name compared to the Relic itself. It's an aura, while a friendly Cabal of the Blackheart core unit is within 6 inches of the bearer, each time a model in that unit makes an attack, reroll a wound roll of 1. If the bear is a real space raider unit, this ability also affects blades for higher units. We've talked about this many times before. Anything that affects your wound roll is a very powerful feature. Being able to reroll all of your, rolls of 1 is nice. Particularly in an army that has so many like poisoned weapons and stuff, where you've already got a 50% chance, at least for most of the army. You got a 50% chance in most cases, to do some damage. Some weapons better, and then if you're shooting vehicles, you have lesser, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, you get my point. Being able to reroll those ones on top of it, is the very, very, very powerful, feature. So, but yeah, anything that affects your wound rolls specifically is, more rare, and just has more value. So, stratagems, you've got the Agents of Vect for 0 CP. Use the stratagem after your opponent uses a stratagem, excluding command reroll. Until the end of the battle, the CP cost your opponent must pay to use that stratagem again is increased by 1. This stratagem can only be used once. So, it's, no longer... admittedly, I know that they made some changes to, Cabal the Blackheart stratagem in 8th edition. I don't remember specifically what they were, but as far as this thing goes, at face value, it's powerful. It's quite powerful. It's not the, OMG, OP, whatever the fuck am I ever gonna fucking do, that the, original Cabal the Blackheart Agents of Vect stratagem was in 8th edition, but still very powerful. So, Cabal of the Poisoned Tongue. So these are the guys that are all about Frenching you, but making it really gross. Obsession, the Serpent's Kiss. They're going to kiss you with a snake. Each time a model with this obsession makes an attack with a poison weapon, improve the poison weapon ability that of that weapon by 1 to a maximum of 2+. So, well, once again, we were talking about how with Cabal the Blackheart, that whole 50% chance on your wound roll. Well, this is improving your wound roll in turn. This is a mega powerful ability. In my personal opinion, you're going to get a lot of mileage out of this ability, considering how many weapons in your army are, particularly in your Cabal related units, are going to be poisoned weapons. So I would say that's a nasty piece of kit right there. If an enemy unit has any models destroyed by an attack made with a poison weapon, by a model with this obsession until the end of the turn, subtract one from combat attrition tests taken for that enemy unit. I've not played enough 9th edition to talk about this as more than just theory. But while attrition and morale tests and stuff are definitely far, or at least in my experience, they are definitely far deadlier than they were in 8th. They're still not the end all be all. You are going to fucking lose the game by any stretch if your leadership sucks. Deals. So, this is okay. It's still a boost. You know, it's a boost. After how good that first part is, they didn't even necessarily have to put in the second part, in my opinion. But warlord trait, towering arrogance. Each time this warlord would lose a wound as a result of a mortal wound, roll a d6. On a 5+, that wound is not lost. They also have the following ability, towering arrogance aura. While a friendly cabal, the poison tongue unit, is within 6 inches of this warlord, each time a combat attrition test is taken for that unit, ignore any or all modifiers. Okay, so first part, being able to shrug off mortal wounds is valuable. It really is valuable. But that being said, I also feel like at the end of the day, you're typically going to face more potential losses due to regular wounds versus mortal wounds. It gets even weirder when you get into shit like psychic only attacks or shit like that. But yeah, the ability to fend off mortal wounds, while it is rare, I don't feel like it's as... I mean, clearly anything that says any wounds, mortal or regular, yeah, that's going to be the most powerful thing. But the ability to shrug off mortal wounds is kind of this weird trade-off of, it's not going to happen to me as often, but most of the time if I had a mortal wound, I could do nothing about it. I wouldn't be able to, you know, armor save against it. I wouldn't be able to invuln save against it. I would just be fucked. You know, I just take the wound and that's it. So the ability to ignore that is valuable, but the fact that it's only limited to mortal wounds is, well, limiting. So the other part, once again, combat attrition, leadership, morale, all that shit is still pretty wishy-washy on how much value adds to the game. It is better than it was in 8th, but it's still not going to, at least in general, it won't end up resulting in, you know, a huge change to your game. So, Relic, Soul Seeker, replaces a Splinter Pistol. So, right off the bat, before we get into the stats on that, the Splinter Pistol itself, I pull that up here quick. Splinter Pistol, 12-inch range, Pistol 1, Strength 2, 0 AP, 1 damage, and it's a poison weapon for up. This one is 18-inch range, so, you know, an extra 50% of the range, Pistol 2, double the shots. Strength 2, so, same strength, AP neg 2, damage D3, lot of upgrades here, and it is a poisoned weapon 2+, so you are wounding on 2+ on top of that. Each time you select a target for this weapon, you can ignore the lookout sir rule. Each time an attack is made with this weapon, the target does not receive the benefits of cover against that attack. Yikes. Short range. It's still a pistol at the end of the day. And also, too, being that it's a poisoned weapon, and strength, too, against anything other than infantry, it's not going to do shit for the most part. But that's not what it's used for. If you're shooting a fucking Land Raider with this thing, you've made a mistake. This is a pretty nasty weapon, actually. When you compare it to its standard stat line, anyways, you know, an extra 50% range, definitely pretty good when you consider the average field. Well, at this point, it's no longer 4x6 on average, but even if you were playing on, like, you know, the older size tables and stuff, you know, that were even bigger, you're still going to be able to reach out and touch somebody on a very large portion of the board. with an 18-inch range. So for a little pistol, it packs a wallop. So, and then for the stratagem, Insidious Misdirection, it's 2 CP for this one. You use a stratagem at the start of the first battle round. Select up to 3 Cabal of the Poison Tongue units from your army and redeploy them. If the mission uses the strategic reserves rules, any of those units can be placed in strategic reserves without having to spend any additional CPs, regardless of how many units are already in strategic reserves. If both players have abilities that redeploy units roll off, the winner chooses who redeploys their units first. Very, you know, considering like all the limitations now on how reserves function and such, the fact that quite frequently you have to spend CP or do other weird shit in order to get units into reserve or being able to deep strike or whatever else, the ability to just stuff more dudes into your reserves for free, well, not totally for free, cheaper, as well as being able to, you know, put more dudes than you normally could put in the reserve, this is good shit. So or even if you don't have strategic reserve for whatever reason going on, you could at least redeploy them, so you could completely fuck with your opponent's plans with that. So next we have Cabal of the Flayed Skull, Obsession, Slay from the Skies. Each time a model with this obsession that can fly or is embarked upon a transport unit that can fly makes a ranged attack, the target does not receive the benefits of light cover against that attack. Add 2 inches to the move characteristic of vehicle units with this obsession. There's a lot of shit that can fly, so that is a boon. I'm not sure that ignoring cover is... I mean, it can be helpful, for sure. Particularly in an army that doesn't have a whole lot of AP weapons standard. Most of their dudes... when you're in close combat, that's one thing. But a lot of the ranged weapons are primarily 0 or neg 1. A good portion of them until you get into the heavier equipment. So if you're talking about shit that you can have en masse in your army, it's definitely useful. I wouldn't say it's bad. I don't know if it's as valuable as some other abilities and stuff, but yeah. Adding 2 inches to the move characteristic of vehicle units with this obsession. This is a game built around movement. We've talked about that as well many times before. So speed is a big, big factor that really comes in handy. That being said, this army already moves at a stupid pace. Just balls-tastically fast across the board. I'm actually currently just kind of poking through here, looking at the different vehicles. That doesn't have the vehicle keyword. There's actually not that much that actually has the keyword. Outside of things that are damaged, with the vehicle keyword, I think the slowest thing is still 14 inches of movement. So an extra 2 inches. Okay. Yeah, that does make a difference. It's definitely helpful, but it's not as valuable to add 2 inches on something that's already moving 14 as it would be to say something that's moving 5 inches is now getting an extra 2. That actually is quite significant of an upgrade. So, once again, is it a boost? Yes. It absolutely is. There's nothing wrong with it. It doesn't harm you. It's definitely helpful to have, etc. But is the trade-off of what you could be getting otherwise worth it? I feel like this is very purpose-built. You have to be building an army specifically around, I want this to be faster than even other Drukhari armies, that I am all about the outmaneuvering. In order to get the most out of it, I would say. So, Warlord trait, Famed Savagery. Add one to this Warlord's strength and attacks characteristics. Extra attacks, great. Extra strength. That I could take or leave it, typically speaking. Although, let me double check here quick. The Archon, strength 3. Okay, going from strength 3 to 4 is pretty valuable in many cases. So I would say, yeah, not a bad thing. Relic, the Obsidian Veil. The bearer has a 4-up invuln save. Okay, yeah, invuln saves, nice. Everybody loves to have an invuln save when possible. When you consider that the Archon that you would have leading your Cabal is probably not exactly super durable, or rather he is, because Shadowfield gives him that 2-up invuln, but you could never reroll it, and if it fails, it's gone for the rest of the fucking game. Having that backup invuln save might not be bad. Not that you have to give it to your Warlord, but, you're probably going to be putting it on your Warlord, if that is your Cabal. Masters of the Shadowed Sky, 1 CP, use this strategy when you select a Cabal, the Flayed Skull unit from your army to shoot with until the end of the phase. Each time that unit makes an attack that targets a unit that can fly, add 1 to that attack's hit roll. If it targets an aircraft unit, add 2 to that attack's hit roll instead. This Cabal, overall, in so many ways, is very situational. You know, is the enemy in cover? If so, this will be useful. If not, it's not useful as far as their obsession goes. The Warlord trait is okay. Once again, boosting your strength from 3 to 4 is quite valuable in many cases. So it's not a bad Warlord trait by any stretch. Boosting up your, it even says here, Cabal the Flayed Skull Archon model only. So giving him a 4-up invuln. That's on the assumption that you're going to lose your 2-up at some point. The likelihood of losing your 2-up is not super high, but ones do happen quite frequently at the same time. So, also kind of situational in its own way. Because generally speaking, you're going to hope that your Archon gets to just keep his badass 2-up save. And then this in particular, there's a lot of things that fly in this game, but you're playing a faction that is almost exclusively made of flying stuff. Unless you're going up against your, fellow Drukhari, going up against fucking Harlequin, basically any Eldari force, and then a little bit from some of the other factions, you're not going to get a whole lot of mileage out of that ability, realistically. So, I wouldn't say it's a bad ability, but once again, it's very situational. Cabal, the Obsidian Rose, Obsession, Flawless Workmanship. Add 6 inches of the range characteristic of all assault, rapid fire, and heavy weapons, excluding relics, models with this obsession are equipped with. Each time the unit with this obsession is selected to shoot or fight, you reroll 1 wound roll and make that unit's attack. Okay, so the first part, adding 6 inches to the range characteristic, that's actually really nice. Once again, in an army that's got so much speed and movement, boosting your range characteristic is not as valuable as it would say in an army that's going to be mostly a static gun line or something like that. There's definitely a lot more value in that case. This is still really good, though. Having the ability to maybe stay in cover, stay out of the reach of enemies' guns is a big thing. If you can outrange an enemy's gunline army, with your fast, super glass cannony type of shit, then yeah, you're better served there. So, the reroll 1 wound roll, once again, anything that affects your wound roll is great. Rerolling 1 and only 1 is okay. I get once again where they're coming from. As far as trying to limit how many things can do that. Once again, pardon me for the whole sniffly stuffiness and crap like that. So, Moving on. Warlord trait, deathly perfectionist, and one of the strength characteristic of weapons this warlord is equipped with, excluding relics. Once again, the boost on strength is kind of hit or miss. In particular, since you're using poisoned weapons in so many cases, it's extra not valuable because so many of those are just based on the poison damage. You're rarely going to be getting any extra mileage out of the boost to the strength on that weapon. So on any non-poisoned weapons, it's a little better then. But on poison weapons, it's rarely going to add anything to your army. So, Relic, the Armor of Misery. It's for the Archon model only. The bearer has a save characteristic of 3 up. Each time a melee attack is made against this bearer, subtract 1 from that attack's hit roll. I would say that this is, once again, kind of like the previous one. It's something that you're going to typically find yourself preferring that and hoping that Shadowfield doesn't fail, but it's nice to have a backup. The Invuln of 4 plus is probably overall better than the save characteristic of 3 plus, if only because of the amount of things that already have a neg 1 or neg 2 AP throughout the game. At minimum, the amount of things that have a neg 1 puts it on the same par as the 4 up Invuln save. So, keep that in mind. The subtracting 1 from an attacker's hit roll on melee attacks, that is very nice. Your Archon is going to be more, actually between both the Warlord trait and this relic, he's going to be more purpose-built for close combat. Namely because of the amount of ranged weapons that are poisoned is quite high. But the Archon has more options in the not so poisoned realm in close combat instead. Just looking right over his options here. Pistols, splinter pistols poisoned, the blast pistol is not. Out of all of his close combat weapons, 2 of the 4 are poisoned, the other 2 are not. It's still 50-50 either way, although given the fact that the blast pistol is only range 6, either way, I don't know, now that I'm looking, I'm getting sidetracked, I'm like, yeah, but that's strength 8, AP neg 4, D6 damage, like, oof, that's got some terrifying oomph to it, but that's neither here nor there, that's not what we're here to talk about. But yeah, overall, between getting the boost on your, strength characteristic of your weapons, and then getting the neg 1 in melee when you're being attacked, you could be carrying around a power sword that's hitting at, strength 5, AP neg 3 still, 1 damage. Are you going to win wars with that? No. But when you've got 5 attacks on top of it, you also have the Blade Artist's ability, so on and so forth. You've definitely got some power there. So, I wouldn't say this is a game changer or a must have, but I would say it's not that bad overall. We do have the failure is not an option. Stratagem 1 CP. Used after taking a combat attrition test, but before any models flee, you could shoot with each model that would flee. If the unit is within engagement range of any enemy models, each model that would flee can instead make 1 melee attack. If any enemy models are destroyed by these attacks, no models flee from this unit. Treat the morale test as having been passed. So this is rather interesting. The ability to give yourself a leg up that you're about to flee, you're about to lose some models, you get a free round of attacks, and but only from the amount of models that would flee. So if only one guy's leaving, he's going to shoot or stab, whatever the situation may be. But you basically get a free attack out of it. And then if you manage to do some damage, you just, boom, you pass the morale test. You know, if you manage to, destroy an enemy model, you can't just, wound them. But once again, situational morale tests are not the end all be all of the game, typically speaking. So yeah, keep that in mind. All right, so that overall covers the pre-built cabals. I'm gonna go over the other cabals as well, the make your own, the Build-A-Bears. Overall, out of what we're seeing here, I really do like the Cabal, the Black Heart. I do feel like it has the most powerful general characteristics. In terms of, I feel like it provides the most oomph to your army without it being purely an offensive choice. It's not just about pumping out damage. It adds some extra stuff in terms of being more defensive, being more maneuverable, being a little bit more durable, being able to put out more damage. It covers a lot of these bases. Namely in terms of the fact that you can, treat the current battle round as greater than it is for power from pain. The reroll on the hit roll, once again, is very mild, but, helps to increase your offensive ability a little bit. Power from pain being that it helps primarily your maneuverability and defensive nature. But the ability to just fuck with your enemy's head regarding labyrinthine cunning, as well as the Agents of Vect ability. That's some pretty powerful shit there. I really like the Cabal of the Poison Tongue in terms of just raw damage output, is concerned. I honestly think that's a very, good Cabal if you are just looking to pump out as much damage and kill as much of the enemy as humanly possible. Obviously, if you're going up against Imperial Knights or something like that, it's definitely not going to be a super valuable sub-faction to use. But in general, against most armies, it's going to be pretty powerful. Cabal of the Obsidian Rose, I would say, is my next choice. It's got some interesting options to it. The failure is not an option stratagem, while extremely situational, in a kind of a weird combination of factors need to be all aligned in order to pull it off. It's kind of cool. The bonus on the range of all of your assault, rapid fire, and heavy weapons, that's a huge boon. I've had boosts to my range with my ad mech army before. Definitely far more valuable in a static gunline army, but at the same time, a lot of static gunline armies are already shooting at a good range. But for an army whose obsession is moving around at high speed, being able to use that maneuverability instead of getting up in the enemy's business, but rather instead trying to play keep away with your opponent, can be an interesting situation. In a lot of times you're trying to capture objectives and stuff, so playing keep away is not, the most conducive to victory, but it can be valuable. Cabal of the Flayed Skull is okay. It's my least favorite of the purpose-built, pre-made Cabal choices, namely because of it being the absolute most situational, and nothing that really wows me, nothing that really stands out to me as a, ooh, that's a must have. Ignoring cover is good, don't get me wrong, because, once again, there's a lot of things, you can actually make that neg one, put that neg one to use, but, a lot of people do play on Planet Bowling Ball anyways, truth be told, so, or line of sight is blocked flat out. At least in my experience, not a whole lot of people necessarily play on tables full of actual cover. But if you do, there's plenty of people who do. It's not necessarily usually a choice factor. It's usually I don't have terrain factor. But anyway, I'm getting off on a different topic here. Being able to ignore cover is valuable, but it's specific. The 2 inches added onto units that are already moving 14 inches or more is not that impressive. It's not that it's not good. Far from it. It's actually very good. Once again, this is a game one on movement. But adding little teeny increments to stuff that already is fucking stupid lightning fast as it is, you're just not going to find yourself in too many situations, I think, overall, where you're going to go, man, if I only had 2 more inches. Well, maybe many of you would. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know anything about needing 2 more inches. Sorry. This is just a weird ability overall. Not in a weird, like, I don't understand it. No, it's more weird because, yes, on the one hand, adding 2 inches of movement is super valuable, generally speaking. And because, once again, this is a game one on movement. But at the same time, the 2 inches on something that's already moving 14, it's, are you really going to get more value out of it because you're now going 16 inches instead? We once again 5 to 7, that's a great boost. That's an amazing boost. 14 to 16 is generally a whatever. I've also talked before about synergy, about how much the abilities that you get, and, you know, Warlord trait and Relic and Stratagem, how much these things play off of each other. This one, you know, none of them admittedly feel like they're super synergetic. I would say that Cabal the Black Tongue, Black Tongue, I combined two of them. Cabal the Black Heart, Cabal the Poison Tongue are both synergetic in their own ways. Cabal the Black Heart is more, very different parts, but if anything, it's like a perfect synergy in that they really feed into each other well. That this part does not work as well on itself, but the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Cabal the Poison Tongue, once again, is more subtle but brute force, if that makes sense. That is just everything is. This is extra poisonous. You can do extra poison. And then there's poison, and we're sneaky and poisonous. There's some good synergy, I feel like, there, too. Not as much. I would say Cabal the Black Heart is the most synergistic. Cabal the Flayed Skull. While there's a whole bunch of stuff that's like, yeah, things that fly and things that move and things that are in the air. It's like, yep, I get that. You use the same keyword in multiple spots. Doesn't necessarily make it synergize offhand. So, none of these are bad choices, in my opinion. There's some obvious really good ones. And some, yeah, maybe for funsies sort of situations or very situational ones. Alright, we'll go ahead and go over the other cabals. And then we'll wrap this up for today. We'll go over, more stuff in the next episode here. Next episode, I'm going to try and cover all the rest of the covens and cults, both. That'll probably be a bit longer episode. And then if we could finally, I might even try to see if I could wrap in, stratagems, warlord traits, and relics. I'd like to not make this take 1,000 episodes, so, especially with Soul Blight and Admet coming up, but. Alright, so other cabals. For your Build-A-Bear cabal, you have, you select 2 obsessions. However, there are ones marked all-consuming, and the all-consuming ones count as 2. So then it's, you basically just get the 1. Okay, so first of all, we have Dark Mirth. It's an aura. While it's within 12 units with this obsession, have the following ability. While it's within 12 inches of this unit, each time an enemy unit is selected to make a normal move, advance, fallback, or selected to charge, roll 1d6. On a 5+, that enemy unit suffers 1 mortal wound. Kind of interesting overall. The amount of frequency with which an enemy unit is going to be within 12 inches of any of your units is pretty likely. you know, especially if you get up in their business, they try to move away from you, they get hit by that. They try to make an advance, they get hit by it. They decide to come hitting on you, they get hit by it, etc. It's a 5-up. It's only one mortal wound, so it's not going to make or break, typically. I would say this is going to be more of a board control, board control item that is more useful against enemy characters, or actually very useful more against, like, elite infantry, and probably even vehicles to a lesser degree. The mortal wounds are very painful against really expensive, but, you know, not stupid, you know, Primarch levels of crazy expensive, you know. Like I said, the elite infantry, you know, because each individual one isn't as super tough as, like, some characters, but you lose enough of them and you've lost a shit ton of your force multipliers. So, no, I think this is a decent choice. In terms of, it has its merits. I wouldn't, you know, well, we'll go through the whole list though first before deciding. But I'm gonna guess that it's probably not going to be top dog by any stretch. Deadly Deceivers, all consuming. So, in this case, this is the only one you would get. Units with this obsession are eligible to shoot in a turn in which they fell back, but if they do, then until the end of the turn, each time a model on that unit makes a ranged attack, subtract one from that attack's hit roll. The ability to fall back and shoot can be very, very powerful. The ability to fall back and charge in the same turn that you fall back, if you get boosts to your charge and stuff, whew, that's even got more power to it, typically speaking. Considering that most of your army is hitting on twos and threes for your ballistic skill anyways, just kind of quick perusing through, it's pretty much threes across the board. You know, outside of, okay, grotesques are only a six, but for the most part, threes and up are what you're looking at. So yeah, going down to a 4-up does hurt, but the ability to fall back and shoot can be very powerful. If you find yourself up against somebody who, yeah, you do not want to go toe-to-toe with in close combat, yeah, you know, or like an enemy who's attempting to tar pit you too. So either of those things, either something stupidly scary that you do not want to be close to. At that point, admittedly, probably pretty well fucked if it's gotten that close. Most of the things that you don't want to be in close combat with are fast enough that they will catch you. And usually durable enough that you're not going to knock them down with one round of shooting at a -1 modifier to hit. But you get my point, in those terms. Overall, I think, generally speaking, the trade-off is worth it, though. The ability to fall back and shoot, particularly enemy tar pits that might be slow-moving or whatever else, but once they've got you trapped, they've got you trapped. That's kind of their whole point and purpose. Or, you know, hell, I've had games, in 8th edition where fucking drones, Tau drones, would fly up, ding my vehicle, wouldn't do any fucking damage, but they're just harassing the thing. And then I would fall back, but I couldn't fall back fast enough to get out of their fucking range. So I would just basically have a vehicle sitting there doing nothing for the rest of the game the moment those drones got into contact. So having the ability to say, fuck you very much, back up and shoot is nice. Disdain for lesser beings. Each time a combat attrition test is taken for a unit with a obsession, add one to that test. Once again, yeah, we've been there. Merciless Razorkin. Each time a model with this obsession makes an attack with a splinter weapon, an unmodified hit roll of 6 scores 1 additional hit. That's some nasty shit. You know, being able to just double the amount of attacks, particularly when you figure your ready handy splinter rifle, being a rapid fire one weapon, you're probably already going to be pumping out a decent amount of shots, at least a 24-inch range. You're typically going to be moving really fast, so you'll probably have your Kabalite Warriors within half range quite frequently. So if you got like a full squad of 20 of them, obviously they might have special equipment or whatever, but you figure 20 of them, double tapping is 40. The likelihood of all 40 of those being sixes is next to zero. But if it did, you're now hitting 80 times. So you're not going to do that, though. I fucking guarantee that. You know, a 1 in 6 chance is not my 20 dudes put out 80 shots situation. It's just not going to happen that way. But still, it's nice. Exploding dice are nice. So, unintentional rhyme. Torturous efficiency. Each time a model with a succession makes an attack with a ranged weapon on an unmodified wound roll of 6, improve the AP characteristic of that attack by 1. This is nice in an army that's primarily covered in AP 0 weapons and AP neg 1 only. You know, you got your purpose-built weapons, but those you're not usually typically too worried about giving them an extra AP. You've already fired those weapons for a reason at specific targets. And since you're looking for sixes here, you're looking more about weight of fire, getting its value out of that. So overall, not bad. You know, not going to typically win wars necessarily because once again, it's on a six, but yeah. Mobile Raiders add 2 inches to move characteristic of models with obsession that can fly. Once again, similar issue to the Flayed Skull Cabal rules. In this case, it is for units that can fly, so it is not just vehicles. You're also looking at Scourges and shit like that, which I'm trying to actually get to the fucking Scourges. Oh my god, where are you? Okay, well, Razorwing Flocks move 12 inches, Reavers are 18, Hellions are 14, Scourges are 14. So, I mean, yeah, and then you got your vehicles that fly. So this can affect more units than just your vehicles. But once again, it's adding 2 inches to something that probably doesn't... It's already moving stupidly fast. The 2 inches is not going to typically make that much of a difference. But since you have more of your army that can access this, now this might be actually something of more valuable or more value to consider. Soulbound. Each time a model with a succession would lose a wound as a result of a mortal wound, roll a d6 on a 5-up that's not lost. This is actually rather nice, too, when you consider the fact that this is going to affect your whole army, not just one specific model in your army. You know, that what I would say is a boon. You know, Towering Arrogance there and Poison Tongue is the same thing. On a 5-up from a mortal wound, you don't lose that wound. But that's only affecting your warlord. This is going to affect your warlord and all of your troops, you know, so on and so forth. Anybody who has the obsession is going to be protected. Toxin Crafters, all-consuming. Each time a model with obsession makes an attack with a poison weapon, an unmodified 6, change that attack's poison weapon ability to poison weapon 2 up. Each time a model with obsession makes an attack with a poison weapon, reroll a wound roll of 1. Okay, so the plus side here, you know, let's go ahead and compare this to the Serpent's Kiss of the Poison Tongue specifically. The plus side here is that it's always a 2+. It's never a, well, you only got a bonus of 1. So, you know, you're 4-ups of 3 now. But that being said, the fact that it only happens on 6s is not the greatest thing, you know. It's not bad. Once again, exploding 6s are great. In particular, this is not as powerful. I would personally prefer to do Poison Tongue so that most of my army is hitting on 3-ups at all times, or wounding on 3-ups at all times, excuse me, as opposed to this where it's 2-up, but only when I've gotten a 6 to hit. Rerolling wound rolls of 1, though, is a very nice trade-off there. So, yeah, I would say that this is valuable, but it is all-consuming. So keep that in mind, that if you're... You know, not if you haven't already picked one of the pre-made cabals, and you want to go with a Build-A-Bear option, is that one going to be worth it to be your only option? So, next we have Twisted Hunters. Each time a model with a subsession makes an attack against a character unit, add one to that attack's hit roll. That is nice, but it's situational once again. It's only good for attacking enemy characters. The amount of enemy characters who are going to be trying to hide behind stuff, typically speaking, will make this a little less valuable. But at the same time, you got an army that's all about getting up close to the enemy. But at the same time, this is for your Cabal, not your witches, not your coven. There's a lot here to go. Is that really worth it? Lastly, we have Webway Raiders. Each time you use the Webway Portal stratagem, which we'll go over that here in a moment, if any units with this obsession are selected, reduce the command point cost of that stratagem by one. So, the Webway stratagem, where are you? There we go. Webway Portal, 1 CP/3 CP. Use the stratagem before the battle when declaring reserves and transports. If you're playing a mission without this step, use this stratagem during deployment instead. If you spend 1 CP, you can set up 1 Drukhari infantry, biker, or beast unit from your army in the webway instead of placing it on the battlefield. If you spend 3 CPs, you can place 2 Drukhari infantry, biker, or beast units in the webway instead. In the reinforcement step of one of your movement phases, you can set up any units in the webway anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 9 inches away from any enemy models. You can only use this stratagem once. Being able to do this for free or for cheaper is nice. You're building an army very specifically with the purpose of, I want to redeploy shit and I want to drop it on top of people. And that's your goal, which in many cases is a very valuable thing for any of your models. But once again, this is your Cabal. And this is specific to infantry, biker, or beast. You're not dropping your raiders and ravagers and shit with that. You are dropping very specific things in with that ability. So, overall, as far as the Build-A-Bears go, it's kind of hard to pick a favorite here. I do like most everything here. I would say that I really like Deadly Deceivers. Just because of the amount of times I've gotten fucked by getting into close combat with something that's just there simply to annoy me, to let me know, haha, you cannot shoot anymore. This bullshit. So the ability, even at a -1 to hit, the ability to back up and say, fuck you, I'm not doing this right now, is nice. But it is an all-consuming one, so there's nothing else really to go with it then. Between the two all-consuming ones, I like that one best. If I really wanted Toxin Crafters, honestly, I'm going to probably instead just build Cabal the Poison Tongue. I feel like the generally more frequent 3-up is at all times is going to be much better than the 2-up only on the 6. If it was not all-consuming, I might feel differently about that. Beyond that, I mean, most of the other ones are good. I really like Merciless Razorkin. Once again, needs 6s, but Exploding 6s, very powerful. A 6 that gives you additional attacks or mortal wounds in addition to your other wounds, etc. Those are very powerful. A 6 that just makes your current attack a little bit better is lesser powerful, generally speaking. I like the concept of Dark Mirth, but once again, how often is that really going to make or break an enemy's plans? I would say that overall it would be fun. It's a nice troll move to basically be like, anytime you move, you advance, you fall back, you select a unit to charge. If you're within 12 inches of me, which is going to be quite frequently, especially if they're charging you or falling back, then yes, they automatically are. There's a 1/3 chance that you're going to take a mortal wound. It's pretty useless against like a horde army, but against super elite armies and stuff, this will be far more valuable. Honestly, I really like that one in a lot of ways. It's fun. It's situational. It's weird. But I would say that it's something maybe worth messing around with. As far as things that I don't like, once again, Mobile Raiders. Just the 2-inch move characteristic is more useful on things that can fly versus just vehicles only. But which admittedly, if you really wanted that, given the rest of the features of Flayed Skull, it might not be a bad choice if you're, if there's something else on the Build-A-Bear that you like. But yeah, I would say that's my least favorite, if once again, only because of the fact that it's adding extra move characteristic to things that don't really need it all that badly. So, but yeah, now that I've looked this over, I kind of want to build some shit and get some crazy Drukhari shit a-rolling, but I'm not going to do that quite yet. So, but yeah, so that was fun. We finally got a little bit further in this book. Like I mentioned, next episode I am going to try, because I don't want this to take four fucking ever. I'm going to try and wrap up at least the Cults and Covens. If I can wrap in Stratagems and Warlord Traits and Relics, cool. If I can't, I will do those all in a whole separate thing. I'm not going to cover all the Crusade shit. Not because it's not interesting, but because it's not probably not something of great value to most anyone else. And then hopefully, hopefully we'll either have two or three more episodes about the Drukhari Codex before we move on. That will be my goal. Or I will consider recording a bunch of pieces throughout the week if I have time. I've been kind of wanting to do this anyway so that I can just kind of put it all in one go. It'd be a huge episode. But being able to just say, all right, here's the entirety of the Codex review in one go would be kind of nice. So, but I think we're going to call that a call for today. As always, follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/theRegimentalVoxPodcast. You can follow me on Twitter @RegimentalVox. Check out the painting studio page. I haven't put up pictures of the latest commission piece that I worked on, but I'll have those up very shortly. I got to do some editing on the, I kind of took them quickly with some new equipment. So I'm going to try and crop out the edges of the background and stuff and see how it turns out. I'm still figuring out how best to make this work, but we'll see. Anywho, but yeah, check it out. Danger Close Painting Studio. But yeah, so thank you guys for listening. As always, greatly appreciate it. I will catch you all in the next episode. This is Caleb Meyer signing out for the evening. Have a wonderful week, everyone.